KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
And thank you for joining us. Jim Williams here with you. Of course, Steve Ryman will be joining you Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of this week. And I'm always blessed to be able to host on Mondays. Jennifer Bryant has been on the show a number of times. Her organization is called NourishNutritionCounseling.com. Jennifer has been a registered dietitian nutritionist since 2005 and a certified diabetes care and education specialist. Her work combines nutrition science with biblical principles. And today, I've kind of named this based on your last newsletter, Jen, which is, by the way, free to our listeners, and we'll tell them how to get a hold of that. But replacing nutrition shame with biblical truth.
Love it.
You love it.
I do.
Now, I'm going to diverge slightly. It really does have something to do with that subject. Mm-hmm. But right now, all of us in the news are hearing about a parasite.
Yes.
And is that being picked up by vegetables or meat?
Yeah, vegetables and fruits.
And fruits.
Yeah. We think. They don't actually know the source, which is part of the problem.
Yeah.
They're trying to figure it out.
So I guess I'm going to start with how worried do we need to be about this?
You know, this? I think as with most things, the news media inflates some of our news to elicit some emotions, right? So, I mean, I think it's good to be a little extra diligent right now with washing fruits and vegetables, maybe cooking them, maybe eating a little more cooked than you have in the past. But I don't think we need to worry. You know, we know that worry actually reduces our digestion.
There you go.
So that might make it worse. So we don't want to do that either. So yeah, be diligent in washing your fruits and vegetables. I think that's the best advice right now.
Tell us about being a registered dietitian nutritionist.
What about it, Jim?
Well, I think that there's so many people on social media, especially telling us how we should eat, this latest diet. I mean, literally, if you go on your, I don't even know what you call it, like if you go on Facebook and you have all these postings there, especially if you go to like Reels and you're getting all those things that are posted on TikTok.
Yes.
Every other one is something about what you should be eating or some supplement you should be taking.
Right.
And I would say, I haven't done the math, but I would say most of those people are totally unqualified to tell you anything.
I love that. No, it's actually a really good point, Jim. I think we gravitate towards information that's kind of sensationalized, right? And some of these influencers do a really good job of making it seem exciting and new. And so we're like, oh, yes, this must be true. But you're right. They maybe don't have any credentials. So that's actually good advice. Just anyone you're following on social media or watching, check out their credentials. A registered dietitian nutritionist has an undergraduate degree in nutrition. So 4 years of undergraduate education. And that comes with all the background with the chemistry, the biochemistry, the biology, all of it, anatomy, physiology. And then they have a year-long internship where they have to actually practice as a registered dietitian in different areas. And they're supervised, of course, during all of that. And then they get their master's degree in nutrition. And then they take their exam, where if they pass their exam, they can become a registered dietitian. And then they have 15 hours of continuing education every year. So really, I mean, really, the registered dietitian nutritionists are the experts in nutrition. Some other modalities do have nutrition as a part of their education, but the registered dietitian nutritionist is the expert.
And I didn't really put this down on our list, but I know I've recently seen some stuff from Health and Human Services that says they're going to try to change the requirements for physicians to at least have a basic training in nutrition, which they don't. It's not required
now. It is in some medical schools. They do have nutrition, including at the University of New Mexico, actually.
Okay.
That's fairly new, though. That was just a few years ago. There was a group of registered dietitians that said, hey, we need some nutrition curriculum in the medical school. And so they got that on board at UNM. So that's been a great change. I think that's a good thing for sure. But I do also think doctors really don't have the time to talk about that. So I like that there's a trend towards getting them to more education, to have more of the basics. But if it's something that takes a little more time, that would obviously be a good example of a need for a referral to a dietitian.
You've been meeting with us on a pretty regular basis for, I think, 9 years.
With here at ABQ Connect?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think I've been on the air here that long.
Okay.
And the first week I was here, I made some inquiries as to I really need to find a nutritionist. And I immediately had a couple people from your church say, yeah, well, you ought to talk to Jennifer Bryan. And so that's been amazing. We appreciate all the time you've invested here.
I didn't realize it was that long. That's fun.
Well, here's something I want to ask you. You describe your mission in helping people.
Mm-hmm.
Not just Christians, but people,
to
find freedom and joy in eating with purpose. What does that freedom look like?
Yeah, I think there's the word balance keeps coming up because I think it's good to have goals. It's good to be thinking about, okay, how could my nutrition be better? It's not okay when we make all these rules for ourselves with nutrition or exercise where we almost become a slave to that. So there's a balance, right? We want to always be working toward a goal, but having that flexibility is super important.
How does your faith and how does faith in general inform that balance?
Yeah, I think the Bible specifically talks a lot about stewarding our bodies. It talks about there's a lot of content about taking care of our bodies, treating them well, because the Lord is using us. And so I think that is kind of the underlying motivation we need to have. We want to make sure we're not doing something for a certain look or a certain physique. We want to make sure our motivations are in line with what God says, which is, hey, I can use you better when you are eating well.
I've used the wrong verbiage in this question, but I'm going to use it anyway. Many people know what they're supposed to eat or allowed to eat or not allowed to eat, but they struggle to make consistent choices.
Mm-hmm.
Why is nutrition knowledge alone frequently not enough?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think just it's our human nature. Our laziness creeps in a lot more, and I think we need to make sure that we're diligently fighting that. And I think also it's hard to make a change when your motivations are shallow. So I'm just going to go back to what I just said.
You mean shallow as in what do I look like in the mirror?
Exactly. Exactly. That is, I mean, I think that's a key to this whole discussion is like God does not care what we look like. And that is frequently stated in the Bible. He cares about our hearts, right? So
you don't have to apologize for being healthy.
No. And I think health is not a bad goal in and of itself. It's the underlying goal underneath that. Are we doing this for ourselves or are we doing this for the Lord?
You have some experience with eating disorders. You counsel with people that have that kind of battle in their lives. Is that an example that you think has caused that? I don't know what an eating disorder is. Is it a state where you're so afflicted by the way you look or whatever that you just are compelled to not eat?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. It's actually considered a mental health problem. And so this is a theme that has been coming up in so many of my counseling sessions and in my small group. But we frequently talk about if we don't change the way we think, it's going to be really hard to change what we do. And so it all starts in our minds. And I think that's where the Bible can be extremely helpful because the Bible, as we're reading the Bible and we're studying the Bible, it's literally changing the way we think. It's changing the way we think about our bodies. It's changing the way we think about the world. And so that needs to be the foundation. If we can't change how we think, we're not going to be able to change what we're doing, especially long term.
You've told us and talked to us in the past about how you work with individuals. If people are interested in more information, and of course, we're a nonprofit, non-commercial station, so we're not saying calls to action for Jennifer, but I do want people to know how to get in touch with you. So nourishednutritioncounseling.com is the website. There's a lot of information there. There's fun recipes. There's answers to a lot of questions. There's, you know, how you make an appointment, all that stuff. But you've started something that I didn't know you did, and that is you have some small group food and faith courses. How does faith inform what you're doing in those groups?
I love that. So this is a new thing. This is why I didn't know about this. We just finished our third week meeting, so I have a small group going on. It's been really fun, actually. I'm going to continue doing these. So what we do is we talk about how there's a 9-week program that everybody goes through. It's my Food and Faith program, and I kind of call it like a little mini Bible study. So we're looking at verses in the Bible that inform how we are motivated to take care of our bodies, and also what are our attitudes about it. So people, you know, I mean, what do you think about when you think of the word diet? Like, what comes to mind?
Oh, you mean the type of diet?
Just any diet. Like someone says, Jim, you need to go on a diet.
That means I got to eat a certain way and there's rules that I got to start following.
And it's going to be terrible and it's going to be hard,
right? And you're going to sacrifice like,
all these attitudes come up, right?
Yeah.
And so the Bible gives us a different picture. And I like to use Galatians 5 as kind of a basis for the whole program. So the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, and self-control. And so we use some of those characteristics to really help us see where are we off the track here with the biblical principles in how we're eating or how we're taking care of our bodies. And the small group atmosphere has been so fun because there's so much just encouragement, like what's going well for you? Like, oh, that's a great idea. I'm going to try that this week, you know? So there's a lot of fun, you know, back and forth, and the ladies are all just really encouraging each other. And so it's been really good.
I love that. I would say, just because I've been a Christian and involved in church for 40 plus years, I would say that my objective observation is that women do a really good job of fellowshipping one another. When they finally get plugged in, some women are working so hard and doing so many things, being moms, employed in a job and taking care of their household, that they are just covered up. But the women that take that time and meet with others, I just see them being very open and encouraging one another. Mm-hmm. I don't see that so much for men.
You know what? I was just thinking about this after our last small group session. I was like, I would really love to start one for men at some point. So if you know of anyone.
There you go.
But I think that's true. And I think with men, you know, this isn't a topic that we talk about a lot with men and in the church in general. And so I think it'd be really helpful to have a resource for them too.
Well, I want to mention to everybody, this will be the last question for this particular segment. And Jennifer's going to be with us till 2:00. So I hope you'll stay with us. Your July Healthy Habits classes will examine the advantages and disadvantages of low carbohydrate, Mediterranean, paleo, all of those kind of low carb diets.
Yeah.
And I guess why would you want people to get that information? Are you going to be recommending one over another?
So that's a good question. No, we really talk about pros and cons of each one. And then I'm a big fan of picking what works for you. I think we're all really different. And so I think to say, you know, everyone should do the paleo diet or whatever, I think that's, we're missing some things. Like God created us all uniquely. And so I think each one of us needs to kind of find what works for us, what eating pattern works for us, and what makes our bodies feel the best so that we can do all the things the Lord has called us to do.
Jennifer Bryant is a registered dietitian nutritionist, also a certified diabetes care and education specialist. We're going to talk a little bit later about, you know, different things that people that might have type 2 diabetes and even type 1 might be considering. So I hope you'll stay with us. Jennifer's available to answer questions from her website, nourishnutritioncounseling.com. We'll be back with more from Jen right after these messages. Thanks for joining us here on ABQ Connect. Registered dietitian nutritionist Jennifer Bryant is in studio with us. Jennifer, if I eat something bad, does that mean I must be a bad person?
No, but you would be surprised how often I hear people say that. And they don't say it exactly like that. They say things like, I was really bad this weekend.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are we attaching like a moral value to what we're eating?
Well, sometimes they're in quotes kidding, but not really.
I know. It's true. It's very pervasive in our culture. It's like what we eat makes us a good or a bad person.
Yeah. Well, I do feel like I might go overboard And I've shared on this program with you, I mean, I am no doubt a chipaholic, but I am going to tell you, there was a whole bowl at an event that I was at this weekend. There was a whole bowl of Ruffles potato chips with a ranch dip. I didn't eat one.
Well done.
And I don't think that's ever happened to me before. And people can look at this and go, oh, well, that's so trivial. I'm just telling you right now, it's not for me.
Well, and it's all about habits, right? If you can have a win like that and then keep that going, where not that it's necessarily bad to have that every once in a while.
And by the way, I wasn't that tempted.
Yeah.
Because you get used to, like I've been eating pretty much a high protein, low carb, medium fat, kind of healthy fat kind of diet. And lost a lot of weight, feel really good about that. I have succumbed to eating a milkshake. And the thing that's so fascinating is when you don't do that for 3 months and then you do it, you feel terrible.
Yeah, you don't
physically.
Feel it. Yes.
And so the temptation's not that great for me now.
Yeah. It's actually pretty amazing how many clues our body gives us to what is good for us and what is not good for us. And you know what? We just don't listen. And so we end up in these patterns of unhealthy eating, and we don't even notice that our body doesn't feel good.
There's more things people use to describe their relationship to food that are negative. What are those?
You know, I don't know any like specific sayings.
Well, here's some things you've told us.
Yeah.
I feel, you know, like you just, I'm bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you've also said, I feel guilty.
Yes.
Or I feel like I'm cheating.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. I mean, those are all negative words. Uh-huh. Does anybody ever come to you and go, I am eating exactly the way you've coached me to eat?
Yeah, actually, that does
happen. They do
quite
that?
A bit.
Oh, good. I love that. I guess I've never achieved that.
No, I love that too. But you know what I will say is, I think there is, I want to just talk about the all or nothing mindset real quick, because I think so many people fall into this. They get something motivates them to make some changes, right? So maybe they're listening today and they're like, oh, I heard Jennifer and Jim talking about this and this, like, I really want to do something. I'm motivated to make a change. And so they will just do a complete 180, you know, nothing. They are eating all fruits and vegetables, all lean proteins, like nothing, quote unquote, bad, right? But then they can't stick with it very long, right? And then they just go back to eating everything else they were eating before. And so there's this whole, like, they're either all in or they're not doing anything. And it's like, really, most of us need to find a healthy balance with that if it's something that we want to continue doing. And I'll give you an example. I had a new client last week, and he was really excited about this new bread that he started making. It's like a prosciutto bread. And he said, are you going to take away my prosciutto bread? I just started making this and it's so delicious. And I said, no. I said, but what we might want to do is eat it a little bit less, or maybe eat it in less quantities, right? So there's not really any food that in and of itself is bad, but we make it bad when we eat it in inappropriate amounts or for inappropriate reasons, like when we're not hungry or we're emotionally eating or we're stress eating or whatever. So I think that balance is just really important to keep in mind. So I just wanted to say that briefly about that all or nothing mindset.
I write down this question and I read it 10 times in preparation for this interview. And I always think, this sounds like a lofty question, rather than just a basic question. Mm-hmm. But I think people are going to understand once you have the answer or give us the answer. Explain the difference between nutritional qualities of food and the moral worth of the person eating it.
I think our culture puts so much of that on foods. And I think we feel like if we're only shopping at the most expensive grocery stores or the health food stores or whatever, that we're doing everything better, right? And I think we just need to like get back to basics with all of this. Like, we need to try to eat more whole foods. We need to cook more at home. We need to just like chill out a little bit on some of these rules that we've given ourselves. I always tell my clients too, you probably have so many food rules in your mind that you think you should be doing that you're so overwhelmed that you can't actually do anything.
And by the way, that attitude would be reinforced by any social media.
100%. Yeah. And just our culture in general. And so I think it's wise to just kind of look at our list. And I actually tell some of my clients, like, write it down. Write down what your food rules are. And then circle the ones you think are actually helpful. And it's really probably only a handful. And then once you can narrow it down to that, it's like, oh, that's not so hard to do, right? And so part of this is just shifting our attitude from the guilt, the shame, the condemnation, and getting more curious. So how did that food make me feel? Was I hungry when I grabbed for those Cheetos? Like, what was going on? Did I get enough sleep the night before? Did that exercise make me feel good? You know, just asking some more questions. I think people could actually gain a lot and be more motivated if they just started getting a little more curious about it.
Well, you're probably one of the most organized people that I know, which I have great admiration for, because I'm not at that level. I do okay at planning, but I know that I have not had healthy eating patterns because I'm too lazy to plan what am I going to eat. And you do a fabulous job of teaching people how to plan. Yeah. What's that process?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things. I think the easiest thing to start with is just think about dinner and just pick, like, I don't know, depending on how many family.
Okay, do you on a piece of paper go Monday dinner?
Yep.
And this is what... Because this helps you go shopping too, right?
That's exactly right. And so I just have a little, I'll even show you, it's in my notepad. I have a meal plan where I just write Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I put what we're making, and then I make sure we have everything.
Does that take you hours to do?
It takes me 10 minutes.
Okay, so that's what I want to emphasize to our listeners. This planning thing is not like this laborious task.
No. And the other thing kind of related to like your value in eating is people think that in order to eat healthy, they have to do hours of planning, hours of meal prep, you know, all of these things. And it's like, no, we don't. So again, I go back to my statement earlier. We all just need to like chill out a little bit. You know, we're making it too complicated. We're forgetting some of the basics of nutrition, and we're making it more complicated than it really needs to be.
This is kind of a silly thing. Embarrassed to disclose this to our listeners and to you, but I will. Sometimes when I go grocery shopping, I will buy kale and lettuce and vegetables because I fully intend to make some great salad.
Yeah.
And then it sits in the refrigerator for a week and is all nasty and I have to throw it away.
Is it because, Jim, you didn't quite have a plan for your kale?
I had no plan.
Exactly.
And I end up not eating it.
Yeah.
And this is really ridiculous. Sometimes I think just having that in my refrigerator is good for me.
By like osmosis.
That's
like,
right.
So that, I mean, there's a simple tip right there. Before you go to the grocery store, just do a little search for, you know, kale salad recipe and find some other things you can add to it. Find a dressing that would be good with it. And then just make it a little more solid plan. I think that's one of the things that contributes most to food waste is we just don't have a plan. And so then we buy something with really good intentions, but then we don't really know what to do with it.
Here's a question that I think a lot of people will identify with. When someone repeatedly turns to food because of loneliness, stress, anger, boredom, or disappointment, how can a person explore the underlying need without falling into shame?
Mm-hmm. The strategy that I use with all of my clients is real simple. It's called practicing a pause. So before you eat it, you pause and maybe you pull out your journal and maybe you just write down like, okay, am I hungry right now? What just happened? Was there a trigger for this? Why am I choosing, you know, XYZ food instead of the fresher food that's in the fridge or whatever. So again, it's adopting that attitude of curiosity.
By the way, I know I've been depressed before and those, I don't think I'm clinically depressed, but I've been down or sad.
Yeah.
And I used to, I used to go get a big cinnamon roll at a local restaurant And I got to tell you, that just exacerbated the problem. Uh-huh. That sugar rush just made it worse.
It does. It's good for like a moment. And food, what it does is it naturally increases your dopamine levels. And so that's the feel-good sensation you're hoping for when you reach for food in some of those emotional situations. But the problem is it doesn't last very long, right? So this is a really good, I'm going to put a plug in here for like biblical counseling. If you recognize a pattern and it's like something that you're continuing to do and you can't seem to break the pattern, get some help from somebody in your church, somebody older that you admire, you know, that's walking the walk a little bit better than you, and ask for help, maybe accountability, you know, some of those things. I mean, I really strongly feel like God has given us the church to help us.
And you've achieved some of that too with your small groups.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's something I do, right? I provide support and accountability for my clients, right? So yeah, sometimes we just need a little helper. We need someone to help.
We've touched on this, but when we come back from thanking our sponsors, which we really appreciate all of you that help us put this programming on the air, we're going to talk about discerning the confusing nutrition culture. And I can only imagine that if I were to open up my phone right now, go to Facebook, there'd be 10 or 15 videos about things that I should be eating, supplements or whatever. So we're going to talk about how to discern what's good. It's very confusing. We'll be back with Jennifer Bryant. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. You know, sometimes I write things down in our show notes, Jennifer, where I confuse myself because...
You don't remember.
Well, I remember, but I don't understand even my question. Like, discernment in a confusing nutrition culture is kind of the segment that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about, I read all of these things on social media, and I don't have any more discernment than anybody else about what's true. So can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, there's a couple of red flags that we can look out for. If it's something that you've never heard before, that's a red flag.
Mm.
Most of the nutrition science that we have, it's pretty tried and true. You know, it hasn't changed a ton. There's been a few things that have changed. That's actually a common misconception about nutrition information. The couple of things that change back and forth, like, for example, the egg thing, right? The eggs was like, oh, eggs are really good for us. Oh, no, eggs are really bad for us. Now eggs are really good for us again. Probably has something to do with how we are all really different. So it probably has something to do with our genes. So should you eat a lot of eggs? Probably depends on your genes. So I think that's kind of an interesting thing to think about, is just if you haven't heard it before, maybe just hit pause, check it. Most of the nutrition information you're hearing on social media probably has a little bit of truth to it. So that's really confusing too. But remember that all of the personalities that are out there are trying to keep you there, right?
Yes.
So they're trying to tell you things that are exciting and new and miracles and revolutionary. You know, they'll use all these words. And so I think we just really want to be really careful that we're not grabbing onto any one person and that we're taking all of the information with a grain of salt.
As you're talking, I'm thinking about supplements in particular.
Yes.
I just read about, New Zealand mussels and GL3Ps or whatever it was. And so here I am. I'm a 68-year-old man. I walk like Herman Munster, I think primarily because I played basketball. And, you know, you just get worn out after a certain amount of time. But if I take this new thing that they've got, I'm going to be, you know, dunking a basketball before too long.
Yeah.
And I have all these hopes like, I think I should try that. And then I come back to reality.
Yeah. And that's exactly what they want you to do. And that's another red flag, is are they trying to get you to buy something?
Yeah.
So that's something to look out for too, you know? And so if they're promising a cure all for everyone and that you have to buy this thing and you have to do it this way, those are all red flags.
Let's compare some of the eating approaches. What are the potential benefits and limitations of a low carbohydrate diet? And that would be like Mediterranean, carnivore diets, et cetera.
Yeah. And I would say the Mediterranean diet is maybe not considered low carbohydrate. It's a little more moderate, I would say, because it does include a lot of like legumes and beans and lentils and nuts and seeds and fruits and vegetables. So that one maybe is a little more moderate. The low carb diets, though, they do have some potential risks, right? Anytime you're cutting out any major food groups, you're going to want to pay attention to nutrient deficiencies. So for sure, with low carb diets, the B vitamins are a risk for being deficient in. Vitamin C is another one, and fiber. Those are kind of the main ones with the low carbohydrate diets. I also tell people it's interesting because our body does a really good job of adapting to a low carb diet. So it can create energy from fats and proteins. It doesn't need carbohydrates to create energy, but some people really don't feel well on a low carbohydrate diet. And so, you know, if you're getting brain fog or you feel like you're having a hard time remembering things, those are a sign that your body is having trouble getting energy for your brain from those fats and proteins.
Okay, so I know a little bit about, so if you're eating a carbohydrate, your body is going to convert that into glucose.
Correct.
If you eat sugar, it's going to convert it to glucose.
Yeah.
You've explained that if you eat more than your body can use, your body's going to store that as fat.
Correct.
So if you eat a low carbohydrate diet, the fat is converted into ketones, not glucose.
Right.
And there's some data that suggests that maybe your brain and other things actually work better.
Some people's do.
On ketones, yes. But others get like brain fog.
Exactly.
And they feel like they have the flu.
Exactly.
So is there one eating plan for everyone that we should all be eating?
No, I think that's a good question. And I think there are so many factors, right? I mean, age, activity level, gender, just generally, like if you have a physically demanding job, right? Let's say you're in construction and you're just physically working all day long. That's really different than if you're sitting at a desk all day, right? And so there's so many factors I think that we need to keep in mind. And we really want to make sure that we're choosing something that we can stick with. That is, I think, the number one thing is we don't want to choose a diet that's so restrictive that we can't follow it.
So I know the answer already, but I got to ask it for our listeners. And that is, I know that there's your particular health and vocation and all of those things contribute to how you should eat. But is there a place for processed foods?
Yes, 100%. And actually, processed foods keep us safe in a lot of ways. And I gave the example in my class this morning at the Y of if you want some berries in the winter, and it's hard to find fresh berries in the winter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Frozen berries are actually a better option because when you freeze it, the nutrients are preserved.
Maybe I didn't ask the question. I really appreciate what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I guess I had in my mind, is it okay if I eat some Pop-Tarts and some, what do you call those bread things that are filled with?
The Twinkies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess process, what I meant was really, and even
like
bread.
Processed maybe.
Yeah, I'm even thinking about various breads. Mm-hmm. I've looked at these breads at the grocery store, mm-hmm. and I'm not seeing anything that's normal ingredients. I'm seeing XYZ preservatives. And
right.
I've taken a picture of some food labels, and I just throw those into chat, and it tells you everything in there in about 10 seconds.
Right.
You can do that right on your phone, which I found to be very helpful.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's safe to say generally we eat far too many processed foods.
Mm.
I think that's very safe to say. The majority of us eat way too much,
but packaged foods like berries and those kind of things,
right.
That makes them so they're not that seasonal. They still have nutrition value.
Right, right. Well, and one of the goals that I think is always good to have is how can I incorporate more fresh foods?
Mm.
That's a great goal. So I always tell people if you can focus on what you need to eat more of, you're not going to be so concerned with what you shouldn't be eating, right? But I think the processed food conversation, I think we just want to be aware that the food companies are really good at making what we call hyper palatable foods.
Mm.
It just tastes really good. And so we have to be careful with that. We know that they can be somewhat addictive. And so there's where we know the Lord has given us self-control. And so maybe we don't buy those very often.
I saw a social media post. And again, this comes to discernment, which is segments about. It said that there's a certain fast food store that has golden arches. I won't say their name. That used to have the ingredients in their French fries be oil and potatoes and salt.
Yep.
And now that ingredient list has a bunch of really scary benzoate and all this other stuff that's like, what is that?
That makes the French fries more crispy and taste better.
And Jennifer, yeah. That can't, is that good for you?
So again, I think the goal to think about is how can I eat more fresh foods? So if you had French fries a couple times a year, would that destroy your health? No, probably not. You're just having it a couple times a year. But if that's a regular pattern, then yeah, that's probably a habit that you want to change.
I'm not exaggerating. I have a friend that every day, I met him in college, every single day he goes to this restaurant and he buys a large French fry.
Uh-huh.
Every day.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And I mean, that's gone before he drives out of the driveway. I mean, that's how fast.
Yep.
But it's just a habit that he's had. And I just don't think that's the way you...
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think that's fair to say. So I think, and that's a great tip just for this conversation in general, is what are the habits that you have? The habits are what make up your overall health. It's not just the once a year that you get the French fries, but it's the habits.
And have you had success in helping people break habits that aren't healthy?
Yes. All the time. All the time.
Are there results? What deters them? Or
no. No. I mean, like I said before, it's really more about their motivations. Mm. So once they see that their habit is not helping them take care of their body, then they want to continue making better choices. And so it's got to be a deeper motivation than just wanting to lose a couple pounds or look a certain way. That is not going to stick with people long enough. And so that's part of why I love putting the faith into it.
I love it. We're already through three segments. We're going to take a break, say thank you to our sponsors. When we come back, I'm going to ask you questions that our listeners have sent in. And by the way, if you want to address questions, you can send them to jim.williams@calvaryabq.org. That's jim.williams@calvaryabq.org. Even though our radio station is on the campus of Calvary Church, we are a tool for the whole evangelical community. We have a lot of different pastors and teachers that are on our station. We have people that are doing various ministries that don't have anything to do with our church at Calvary. I mean, we want to be your tool. So I hope you'll call us and let us know, or contact me or Steve Ryman, and we'd love to have you on there to talk about what's going on. Jennifer Bryant's going to answer listener questions that have been sent in by email when we get back. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. Jennifer Bryant with NourishNutritionCounseling.com is our guest today. She's our subject matter expert on all things nutrition. Jen's been on the radio with us, at least with me, for about 8 or 9 years, so we appreciate all that time you've invested. I'm going to ask you some questions that have been sent to me via email, and actually a couple of them came to us through our podcast site, which is abqconnect.online. And I'm going to start with a wife, I think, asking on behalf of her husband. There might be plenty of those today listening. Have you worked with people, Jen, with type 2 diabetes whose blood sugar control improved enough for them to achieve remission?
Yes. There's a couple things I want to say about this, though. First of all, the earlier you catch it, the more likely it is to reverse it. Okay? Mm. So for anyone listening who's been hesitant to go to the doctor or get their lab tests, stop hesitating and just go do it.
What are the consequences of not? I mean, people lose their feeling, they lose mm-hmm. their sight. I mean, mm-hmm. it's very serious.
Yeah, there's a lot of complications that come with having prolonged high blood sugars. Kidney failure, heart disease, neuropathy, which is what you were talking about, the mm-hmm. loss of feeling in your fingers and toes, and also retinopathy, which is eyesight problems. So, you know, I think it's human nature to just kind of say, if we don't know it's happening, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But that's not true. So get checked often and take control right away.
Are the sacrifices that a person with type 2 diabetes, are the nutritional sacrifices they have to make that dramatic?
No. And I think that's a misconception. A lot of times people think, oh, I can never eat carbs again. And that is so far from the truth. Or I can never eat dessert again or whatever. And so I think a little education goes a long way with diabetes. There's really a few minor adjustments you can make that can really make a big difference. And then the other thing I would say is, and Jim, you asked me this was a few years ago, but I use it all the time. You asked me what my definition of wellness is. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the last part of that definition is really important when you talk about achieving remission with diabetes. And the last part is with the understanding that God is sovereign. Mm. So sometimes we can do all the things we can do and our bodies just still don't quite work right. And so this goes back to our conversation in the first segment too. I need people to understand that if they're doing everything they can and they still have to be on a diabetes medication or whatever, they don't need to have guilt and shame about that.
Mm.
Right?
Yes, right.
I think that's a huge thing that comes with type 2.
Do you have people though that might even be angry at God they have this perception that they're doing everything?
Yes, yes. And so there's two things that really influence if you're going to be able to get it into remission, and it's age. Mm. You can't help if you're 80.
Yeah.
Right? Like
there's no recovery.
We all just age, right? And also genetics. If there's a really strong family history, as we get older, sometimes we can do all the things we can do and we still need a medication to help us, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I firmly believe that God's given us medications as helpers to help us take care of our bodies.
But I think you would also say, well, maybe you wouldn't, so feel free to object, but there's also medications that people could be off of if they just did what they were supposed to do.
Yes, yes. And in fact, let me just share. I led a retreat for one of the local churches a couple months ago, and somebody asked me what the Bible says about GLP-1s.
Mm.
And I'd never been asked that before. And I thought, oh, that's a really good question. And so, of course, on the spot, I had to come up with an answer. But I think this is pretty good. I said, medications are great helpers from God, but we want to be careful that our medications are not covering up sin patterns. So if you're eating French fries every day and you have to be on a, you know, diabetes medication or cholesterol medication, you're probably not doing everything you can with your body, with your health, right? And so I think that's an important caveat to remember. But diabetes remission is totally possible in many cases.
Well, I love that you're answering that. I want to encourage people, look, in an hour, you can't possibly answer all the questions people have.
Yep.
So I want to encourage people that nourishnutritioncounseling.com is a website that Jennifer provides a lot of answers to a lot of different things. There's nice, menu recipes and different things that are kind of fun. So I want to talk to you about food additives. And are you encouraged now that the federal government's kind of gotten involved in limiting like food additives, like food coloring and other things that are dangerous?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a good start. I think there's a long way to go.
Yeah. Well, we actually have to change a lot of cultural norms, right?
Well, and I think here's where it'll be interesting to see. So I'm not an expert in this, but I am very curious there is a push from MAHA, the Make America Healthy Again movement, to get rid of the highly processed foods, food additives, et cetera. But the administration doesn't seem like they want to actually put regulations on companies.
Well, there's a certain pastry that is sold on shelves across America. And I asked Jennifer about this so-called pastry that you stick in a toaster.
Yeah.
And I said, is this good for you? And I think your answer, I'm going to paraphrase, was something like, well, if you have anything in your pantry that you bought 6 months ago that still isn't spoiled, it's probably not something you should eat.
Yep, that's true. That is very true. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. I think it's a good start. I hope it keeps going. We'll leave it at that.
I love it.
Yeah.
I asked you earlier about meal planning, but you kind of said, well, let's focus first on dinner. So here you are planning, let's say, for a family of four.
Yeah.
How long does it take you to set up a meal plan for a week for the Bryant family of four?
Well, okay, I'll tell you my favorite tool that makes it really fast for me that most people don't do. And I have one meal planning book with all my recipes in it. I literally tear out recipes from my cookbooks and I put them in my one book. I know people think I'm crazy for doing that, but it helps so much. I only have one book that I'm looking at to plan my meals for the week. And so I sit down with my book. I pick, I have it sectioned where I pick a seafood, one or two seafood options, one or two vegetarian options, one or two chicken options, and one beef or pork option. And it takes me 15 minutes to make my meal plan. It takes me another 15 minutes to put in my grocery order. I don't go to the grocery store anymore. I do pickup.
Oh, nice.
And so 30 minutes total, and I've got my meals ready for the week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know a few people that are doing that, ordering online thing. The only complaint I hear is that occasionally you order like 32 ounces of something and they end up delivering you 2 16-ounce, whatever it is. I think people try to do the best they can do.
It does. Let me say one more thing about it. It cuts down on impulse buying.
Oh.
Because you're just putting in what's on your meal plan.
So, your kids are old. They're not old, but they're older.
12 and 16.
So your 12-year-old isn't sitting in a basket while you're going through the grocery store saying, Mommy, can we have this? Can we have this? Can we have that? So is there a lot less pressure on you now?
You know what? It's great. Once my son started growing a lot, which was probably around the age of 12, I remember he shifted from being kind of a picky eater to everything I made was amazing. And all of a sudden he'd be like, Mom, this is so good. Thank you so much for making this. And I was praising the Lord for that change. That was a welcomed change.
I love that so much. We got about a minute left, so I want to ask you about your favorite recipes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a couple. This is the recipe I joke that made me actually start liking salmon. Mm. It's called Easy Barbecue Salmon. And it's just a salmon fillet. You marinate it for a little bit with lemon juice. And then it has a little rub on it that is chili powder, cumin, salt, cinnamon. And that might be it. And chili powder. Did I say that?
Yes, you did. Right.
Chili powder, cumin, salt, and cinnamon. And it's so delicious.
Now, I wouldn't have... I as you were going through the spice list, the cinnamon was the surprising one.
I know. It's a little bit sweet. And it's just so good. It's the recipe that made me start liking salmon. My kids love it too. The other one is that's really a go-to for me is it's a chicken taco recipe. Just, some chicken breast with some seasoning, lettuce, cheese, tacos.
I love it. I love it. I always regret when the music starts playing when I'm with you, because we literally could talk another hour with no problem. Jennifer Bryant, nourishnutritioncounseling.com. A lot of information there available, a lot of free information. And Jen, I just appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks.